Welcome to the Perry Johnson Laboratory Accreditation Podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions relevant to the laboratory accreditation industry. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you'd like to tune into our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjlabs.com or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Hello, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Mike Kramer. I will be presenting today on the topic of ISO IEC 17025 Section 77, Assuring the Validity of Results and Associated PL1 Requirements. I'm the Calibration Inspection Program Manager at PJLA, and I am presenting today on behalf of Perry Johnson Laboratory Accreditation, and want to welcome everyone and appreciate you all signing in with us this last day of May. So getting into today's topic, 7.7, ensuring the validity of results. ISO 17025 places a lot of emphasis on interlab comparison and proficiency testing. Other than the fact that both 17025 and PJLA requires it, proficiency testing can be a beneficial tool for laboratories to check the reliability of their results by comparison within their peer group and to demonstrate their performance to clients and accreditation bodies. With increasing availability of proficiency testing schemes in many technical fields, the criteria for selection of an appropriate scheme are becoming more important. So with that being said, just jumping right into the requirements. Very first requirement under Section 77771, the laboratory shall have a procedure for monitoring the validity of results. The resulting data shall be recorded in such a way that trends are detectable, and where practical statistical techniques shall be applied to review the results. The monitoring shall be planned and reviewed and shall include, where appropriate but not limited to, and we'll get to that. We have a listing of internal controls here. So just looking at 771, we see the word shall there. So the shall is a requirement. So this is an area that you shall have a procedure, something showing how you comply with this section, and records. So your data that you collect in compliance with this section should have correspondent data that should be recorded. So like I said, 771, where appropriate but not limited to, and these are by all means not all encompassing to everyone. These are internal controls. When I say internal, these are within your four walls that implement these tools. So very first one there is, again, going back, looking at the whole clause, this monitoring shall be planned and reviewed and shall include, where appropriate but not limited to, A, use of reference material, quality control materials. See, ISO 34 is for reference material producers, so you could very well have reference materials with assigned values where you can go back and test your results. What I have up on the screen there is perhaps pH buffers, which could be used to perhaps check pH meters that are being used in your testing. Use of alternative instrumentation that has been calibrated to provide traceable results. C, functional checks of measuring and testing equipment. And this can be the verification that equipment responds properly to any process inputs. See this a lot on electrical type equipment. D, use of check or working standards with control charts where applicable. So ideally, I know you folks in testing You have often worked into your process, perhaps control standards, where you have statistical data on there that sort of assures everything is in control. Or if you're a calibration lab, perhaps you have a working standard that you can work in with your customers' artifacts as they're submitted, where you would basically treat the working standard, or I used to call them more check standards, and gather statistical data. And if anything's out of kilter, perhaps you have two standard deviation limits as a warning, or three. If it surpasses that, it means that perhaps the system is out of control and something needs to be investigated. D, intermediate checks on measurement equipment. So this is also in conjunction with section 5.5 on equipment. So yes, your equipment should be calibrated. However, it's very good to have some intermediate checks in place on your equipment between calibration, just to assure that perhaps nothing is drifting, your equipment is still in a calibrated state of being within tolerance. It could alleviate a risk of having to go back and do an investigation if the equipment was out of tolerance when you submitted it back for recalibration. If you have a good system of intermediate checks, that perhaps can be used to discover it before equipment was to be drift, or perhaps cut down on the amount of impact analysis that needs to be done. Continuing down the list. F, replica test of calibrations using the same or different methods. G, retesting or recalibration of retained items. Going back, doing them again, seeing if the results are being reproduced. Correlation of results for different characteristics of an item. H, so perhaps temperature has an effect on the item being tested or calibrated, and that could be tested as far as H is concerned. I, review of reported results. Pretty simple there. It's also required in 7.8 that all reports need to be reviewed prior to being released. Well, this can also be incorporated into your internal control program under 7.7. J, intra-laboratory comparison. We're going to talk about that a little bit more in proficiency testing, but intra-lab is perhaps conducting a proficiency test within the confines of your four walls, or you're within your organization, or you may have various technicians test an artifact, calibrate an item, and compare the results in a meaningful way. K, testing of blind samples. So that could be, for instance, if you're a testing lab and you have samples and you retain those samples, where they could be worked into the normal workflow. A technician can test that sample blindly, not knowing that it's already been through there, or perhaps even I've actually implemented this in my brief career as in a lab manager for a testing organization, where they could even be testing their own sample that they tested before and not even know it. So whatever you're doing in this area, as you know, you have to have a procedure and records. So just assure that records should be maintained to support that the activities are being performed. I've done assessments before where I've seen checks being made on equipment, but nothing being recorded. So just bear in mind, it's a good idea to put the pen to the paper and capture these records here. Moving on, 7.7.2. Now, these are external. So we mentioned everything before under 7.7.1 was internal to the lab. These are external to the lab, where you're going to incorporate results from outside the confinements of your organization. 7.7.2, the laboratory shall monitor its performance by comparison with results of other laboratories. And I bolded there. Where available and appropriate. This monitoring shall be planned and reviewed and shall include but not limited to either or both of the following. That is proficiency testing. And you see the definition of proficiency testing at the bottom there. Those of you that are accredited with PJLA, we refer to that commonly as third-party tests. So ideally, the proficiency testing top of the pecking order as far as third-party providers would be an accredited proficiency testing provider, which would fall under ISO 17043. And then B, participating in interlab comparison other than proficiency testing. So interlab comparison, you see the definition there. Organizations perform an evaluation of measurements or tests on the same or similar item by two, bare bones minimum, two or more laboratories in accordance with predetermined conditions. Then you see the definition for proficiency testing, which a good reason why these are being incorporated together, PL, and that should be as specified in PL1. That's a typo. It shouldn't be PL3. PL1 is our policy on proficiency testing. And we refer to that as third party in PL1. So these requirements, and you'll see particularly where the very top there at 772, where available and appropriate, these are all in harmony with the requirements that PJLA have in effect in our policy there, PL1. Okay, very important here, 773, you're doing proficiency tests, perhaps an interlab, you have control charts, data for monitoring activity shall be analyzed, used to control, and if applicable, improve the laboratory's activity. If the results of the analysis of data from monitoring activities are found to be outside predefined criteria, so they need to be defined in up front there, appropriate action shall be taken to prevent incorrect results from being reported. So I think it's very important there that predefined limits need to be specified and supporting data should clearly indicate whether the system is in control and or results are in agreement. So I have seen folks were having logs in a scale or a balance that's going to be used to perform a gravimetric type calibration, put a test weight on there, recorded. Ask the question, what are you looking for? You need to have an answer there as far as the predetermined criteria to determine whether or not everything is in control. Same with proficiency testing, interlab proficiency testing. Say bare bones minimum, yourself and one other organization. This is our data, this is their data. Okay, do they compare and what are you basing that on? And we'll expand on this a little bit more when we get into here PL1 for proficiency testing. Okay, just a couple of more tidbits here before we get into PL1. Interlaboratory comparison are used for various reasons other than just to fulfill the requirements of your accrediting bodies. They can be used to validate or verify procedures. So have a clause there under 7215. Say you're a calibration or testing lab and you want to expand your scope of accreditation to include additional types of tests or calibrations. You have to have, as you see the requirements there, you shall verify it. So you have to have something in place that shows that you can properly perform the method before introducing them. Proficiency tests can be, of course, used for that. Also to certify any reference material, possibility there. To assess the competence of laboratories, or in more general, to investigate the degree of comparability among laboratories. Irrespective of the specific aims of a interlaboratory comparison, the results can be used by participating laboratories to check the performance of its test method or its staff to demonstrate its competence toward clients and to your accrediting body to gain useful information in the evaluation of measurement and uncertainty. So just trying to drive through, yes, proficiency testing, I know at PJLA, we place a lot of importance on it. We're looking for it to be done every year. But there are other useful items which proficiency tests can be used for, which your organization can take to heart and use it to your advantage for other things other than fulfilling a requirement. All right, switching gears here, going to look at the accrediting body's requirements. So regardless, I'm assuming most folks here are accredited with PJLA, but even if you're accredited with another ILAC MRA, it comes under the ILAC signatory, such as PJLA. We are a signatory of the International Laboratory Accreditation Cooperation and of, in the U.S. here, Asia Pacific Laboratory Accreditation Corporation for both testing and calibration. So as a ILAC signatory, we're expected to enforce P documents, which are policy documents. So when we're assessed by ILAC, we are assessed to 17011. As our labs are assessed to 17025, and we're also assessed to assure that we're complying with ILAC's policies. So hence their policies become our policies. So like I say often during my assessments, these aren't extra things that we're throwing at you, having you do on top of 17025. As you see, ILAC has a policies, hence we have PL1. So the requirements in PL1 are strongly cross-referenced to those in the ILAC P9 policy there for proficiency testing. All right, so I want to look at the various requirements in PL1, some of the more important ones here, I think. And right off the bat, if you're in the loop of getting accredited, not accredited yet, perhaps you're scheduled, make sure you got your proficiency testing completed. So there under clause 3.1, prior to accreditation by PJLA, an applicant organization must provide objective evidence of proficiency testing activity for at least one item included in its desired scope of accreditation. That's a pretty straightforward there. So you're not going to get accredited until you get that proficiency testing under your belt, that initial proficiency testing. The item that the organization chooses for proficiency testing must be one that is suitable to demonstrate the competence of the organization for the main field of activities, either calibration or testing. The result of this proficiency testing must be meaningful, is that the organization not only needs to perform the proficiency testing, the resulting data must demonstrate the organization competencies in performing this specified test or calibration. So, yes, you got to do proficiency test, and secondly, you have to successfully complete the proficiency test prior to getting accredited. And as you folks that are accredited with us know, it's not a one-time thing. So upon achieving accreditation by PJLA, organizations are required to perform proficiency testing annually. Results of this testing shall be monitored during the organization's subsequent surveillance or reaccreditation assessments. At a minimum, organizations are required to have objective evidence of favorable proficiency testing results for each discipline in their scope of accreditation within a four-year cycle. So prior to accreditation, we're going to be looking for a proficiency test, and then with each reaccreditation or surveillance assessment, we're going to be looking for your annual proficiency testing as per this requirement. So we're mentioning about a four-year cycle, and we're talking about disciplines there. So what are we referring to? A calibration or testing discipline is a category of calibrations or set of tests intended to quantify or evaluate common or related parameters of a unit, device, or substance submitted for calibration or test. So at PJLA, we have under calibration, we have 9 disciplines. We have them listed there: acoustic, chemical, dimensional, electrical, mass force, weighing devices, mechanical, optical, thermodynamic, and time and frequency. Excuse me. Testing: acoustical, biological, chemical, dimensional inspection, electrical testing, environmental, mechanical, microbiological, non-destructive, and thermodynamic. We're talking about disciplines, and you'll see the word subdisciplines throughout PL1, and we go into a lot of detail and examples there in PL1, and putting together a 4-year plan to assure that all your disciplines are being included in the 4 years. So, and we talk about subdisciplines. So, what are we referring to there? At a minimum, subdiscipline is an element of an associated calibration or test discipline for which the magnitude of a stated parameter has been defined as a measurement objective and will be determined by a specified method using appropriate skills and equipment. A subdiscipline may be composed of one or more such elements where the organization has determined that the measurement objective, the specified method, and the appropriate equipment are either identical or similar to such a degree that they can be considered as mutually representative. In addition, the organization shall have determined that the successful performance of either would satisfactorily objective evidence of the technical competence in the other there. So what this is basically saying is if you have, and we have examples over here for y'all to look at, and right up there for calibrators. So basically micrometer, dial indicators, and calipers. Typically, if perhaps the standards are the same, i.e. gauge blocks, procedures are very similar. I have a different display on one from the other. One might be reading more finer resolution than the others, but everything else is pretty much the same. So this is basically stating they can be grouped together as a subdiscipline. So for example, if you did a proficiency test on a micrometer and successfully completed, you're basically going to incorporate, hey, you've done that. Also, this would include proficiency in dial indicators and calipers. Testing area, I have an example here. I know there's a lot of others that when you're putting together your proficiency testing, just want to assure that, test methods are similar enough, equipment standards used, perhaps training and personnel are all the same or are very similar, where proficiency in one can be crosswalked over to the other. Example that we have here is in the item of hardness, mechanical testing, where perhaps threaded fasteners, new hardness, machine components, Victor hardness, Leafrock hardness, for the mechanical testing discipline. An organization may have determined that the measurement objective, the specified method, and the appropriate skills and equipment used to test hardness by Victor methods are either identical or similar to such a degree that they can be considered as mutually representative. Hence, they can be considered a subdiscipline under the mechanical discipline. So you're required to initially get done proficiency testing prior to getting accredited. And at a minimum, organizations are required to have objective evidence of favorable proficiency testing results for each discipline in their scope of accreditation within a 4-year cycle. So again, you have to do proficiency testing every year. If you have a large scope and you have perhaps all those disciplines covered, you're going to have to double up some of those years in order to get everything done over a four-year period. I have an example here, and this comes right out of PL1, so you can go back and reread it in that document, particularly those that have large scopes. So if, for example, you have four disciplines, and two have no sub-disciplines, so they all are line items by themselves. By the other two disciplines have multiple sub-disciplines. All four disciplines must be represented in the four-year plan at least once during the 4 years in which the plan is active. Two disciplines have no sub-disciplines to choose from and will be presented on the plan in the year chosen by the organization. The other two disciplines will be represented by selection of the sub-disciplines. So the sub-disciplines chosen are to be from the more challenging from those available. During the next four-year plan, those disciplines represented by selected sub-disciplines will be represented by different sub-disciplines, selected again from the more challenging of those remaining. So an example of that comes to mind, say, under dimensional, you have various things under dimensional that may include, say, the calipers, micrometers, indicators, where that you'd have to do that discipline during an initial four-year period. During the following year, you're not going to go back and duplicate the micrometer, calipers, indicators. You'd have to choose from something else from down that list. So perhaps you may have like surface plates, for example, thread plugs, things like that, which you would need to choose from. So, four-year plan, organizations seeking accreditation shall develop a four-year proficiency testing plan using our PJLA template, PT, which is we call it LF81 is our form number, or other, not requiring you to use that. A lot of folks use it, or perhaps you have an equivalent document prior to the initial assessment. So, if you're out there looking to get accredited, yes, you have to get it completed. And before you're accredited, you're going to have a four-year plan in place that meets the requirements of PL1. So you might want to get that proficiency test completed and then also get your four-year plan situated and submit it to PJLA for approval. Plans will be, once you are accredited, and during the initial accreditations, plans will be reviewed by the assessment teams during the on-site visit for compliance to this policy. Any deviations from the mandatory requirements as outlined in this policy shall be submitted to headquarters for approvals. Headquarters will notify the assessment team and the client of any such approvals for deviations to this policy. The assessment team will review and sign off on the approval of the four-year plan. Any exception or request for intra-lab and repeatability studies, one area that would need PJLA headquarters approval, and we'll expand on that in a little bit here. So there's an example of the LF81 form. And this form is actually a lot longer than this, so it's got a lot more than three places. I just shrunk it down so it would fit on the slide and y'all can see it. That's available on our website for you to construct your four-year plan and updating it as well. Additional requirements in PL1. Accredited organizations wishing to expand their scope shall apply the requirements of requirements we just went up over in 3.0 and 4.0 of this policy, modifying the four-year plan as necessary in order to include the capabilities being added as a result of the scope expansion. 4.5, accredited organizations shall be able to provide objective evidence that their policy and procedures related to proficiency testing are reviewed for suitability. The review, as well as any conclusions or action resulted, should be documented there, I'm sure, or recorded. Got left off there. So if you recall, one of the 17025, you had to have a procedure in place. So policy or procedure. So needs to be reviewed for suitability. And actually, I included a good time to do that, particularly if you're a small organization, is perhaps during a management review. Include that in under the input under 892, suitability of policies and procedures. So types of proficiency testing. I want to mention first international schemes of proficiency testing. So this is something that we're required to participate. When I say we, PJLA, we're required to have to participate in these. And these are coordinated, as you can see, by, for us, our region, the Asian Pacific Laboratory Accreditation Cooperation, and ILAC, International Laboratory Accreditation Cooperation, where PJLA will select potential participants from its listing of accredited or applicants organization and select nominees from those who qualify on the basis of CMCs or detection limits appropriate for the calibration or test available. These will be at no cost to the organization except for the time to perform the test. Organizations will be selected first on a voluntary basis. However, PJLA reserves the rights to require participation by any organization. So what does this say to PJLA and our NILAC signatory? We'll have PJLA accredited labs participate in this uniformity, you know, hoping we're all working off the same page here that say perhaps even 17025 accredited facilities, say in Europe, Africa, wherever they happen to be under the ILAC signatories, they may be very well be included in this proficiency testing schemes. Hence, then the data will be reported and reports generated, and hopefully, I certainly do hope our labs are within those predefined limits. So ideally, if you have an opportunity to participate in this one, I would certainly consider that a feather in the organization's cap. They were able to participate in one of these. We're at the mercy of ILAC and the Asia Pacific Laboratory Accreditation Cooperations for when they're offered, but we are required to participate in them. So the following activity listed in their order of preference and acceptability have been approved by PJLA for the purpose of demonstrating proficiency. First of all, participating in proficiency testing program sponsored by a third-party accredited provider. That's top of the pecking order there. Going down the list, participating in proficiency testing program sponsored by a third-party provider. You don't have the accredited provider listed there. Interlab comparison, very popular amongst PJLA labs that I personally assess. And it is appropriate means of proficiency test. Interlaboratory comparison organized by industry groups, perhaps round robins, through method validation studies, small groups, bare bones minimum, two-party comparisons, etc. And then moving down the list to here, when the above approved methods, those methods that I just went through here, they don't require any additional approval. When their organization, and recalling the requirements under in 17025, were available and appropriate. You have to compare your results to results from outside your organization. So I mentioned PL1 was in harmony with that. So under here, when the use of an approved method is considered by the organization as being impractical as a means of demonstrating proficiency tests, the following activities listed in their order of preference may be used pending prior approval by PJLA. And that's intra-lab and repeatability studies. So these are things, and there's a note right there in PL1. Yes, you just don't put that out there and say you'd like to request it. You have to state your case in writing and state why third-party or inter-lab comparisons are not feasible and how you plan to conduct the test and analyze the data in a meaningful way. This document shall be submitted to PJLA headquarters and typically presented to the program manager for review. So again, we promote the use of third party, top of the pecking order. We strongly encourage its accredited organizations or applicant labs to participate in these proficiency testing programs sponsored by third party whenever such programs exist. Some of the advantages to participating in this types of programs are assurance that the proficiency test takes place at appropriate and regular intervals. Complete objectivity on the part of the proficiency testing provider. I also want to add, and sometimes I'll see in the request for intra-lab, and when there are third parties providers out there, that confidentiality is an issue. Well, with a third party provider, that's not an issue. You are provided a code, perhaps a number, and all the other participating organizations are provided a number. So nobody knows who anybody else is. You would see basically the proficiency testing provider, third party provider. They're interested in your results, complete objectivity here. And in calibration, your results, your degree of uncertainty. And you would see your results analyzed with all the other participating organizations and perhaps a good reference value that the proficiency testing provider has obtained. So what I was getting at, yes, your is complete confidentiality is maintained throughout. So that is not a valid case when pleading a third party case why you cannot do a third party proficiency test. I have seen that come up before. Statistical analysis and reporting of the resultant data by the provider. They'll do the reports for you. They'll do the analysis. They'll do the like I said, you'll see your organization listed. You would know who you are. See what you're typically, I see, of course, I see mostly all calibrations. Typically, you see your results, your uncertainty, perhaps see your e-normal analysis. Also see perhaps your z-score included in there, or typically the two most popular. And also, your third-party provider can directly report the results to PJLA on behalf of your organization. Some of these tests to third-party providers can be found on our website. We have a tab there for proficiency testing providers. It is a responsibility organization to confirm the proficiency testing provider's competence. Mentioned before, competency can be based on 17043, which is the accredited. You can have, actually, it's one of the newer areas that PJIL offer accreditation in. 17043 proficiency testing providers. However, there are bases for determining competency, such as well-recognized national or international programs or organization mandated by regulatory authorities. If the organization has questions or concerns regarding potential third-party proficiency test providers, contact PJLA headquarters directly. All right, interlab comparisons. So requirements for they're perfectly acceptable. You don't have to get that prior approval for doing an interlab comparison. So an acceptable interlab comparison is one in which two or more organizations perform testing or calibration on the same or similar artifact using compatible method under specified conditions. Data for each organization shall be in agreement with that of other participants. Organizations should be, this is when we revised our most current copy of PL1, we revised this somewhat, and this is what we revised, and I'll explain why in a moment here. Organizations, one thing we changed is that should be accredited whenever possible. However, in cases where the participating labs are not accredited, it is up to the laboratories to confirm their competencies. Records for this competencies shall be maintained. So prior to our latest revision, we used to specify that the other organizations had to be accredited. And if they weren't accredited, they basically had to jump through the requirements for traceability. And that's our policy on PL2 for traceability, where we go through an LF-123, because you can be not accredited and provide traceable results. So we found that with testing labs that sometimes was not always the key factor there. So hence we changed that requirement of being accredited to being competent. So, you know, if an organization is accredited, you know, the scope of their accreditation would be objective evidence and a record that can be maintained for that. If they're not, then the onus will fall onto the laboratory, where they have to maintain a record of what they're hanging their hat on as far as determining the other organization was competent in doing their interlab comparison as an interlab partner. So, and analyzing the interlab comparison. So again, bare bones minimum, your results, one other organizations. The more the merrier, I like to say. So ideally you can coordinate those perhaps among peer organizations. But it's not here's our data, here's their data. You have to analyze it. And if you recall, you have to have predefined limits established. So one of the more popular ones I see in calibration is called an E-normal analysis, where the lab is looking at the formula there. The lab is the result obtained. Reference is the value obtained by the outside organization to be used. U95, that's the expanded uncertainty associated with each organization. Typically, it's at a 95% confidence interval. And if you plug in all the numbers there and it falls within the absolute value of 1, they are considered to be acceptable. And the results are comparable. So basically, what that is looking at is each organization, the values, and the degree of uncertainty that they're overlapping each other. And this is a calculator. It's on our website. We do have a calculator website at the PJLA. I believe it's under the resource tab. It's available to you all as a resource. So if you are doing an interlab comparison, this is an appropriate way to analyze your proficiency test. Here's their data. Here's their data. At the various points, this is a E-normal analysis. Hopefully everything turns up green. They compare with each other, and a successful proficiency test has been completed, and the results are in agreement with each other. Not the only means of proficiency testing and other statistical technique for a proficiency test could be used as Z-scores. Typically, you'll need more than 2 to do that, which is a correlation analysis of repeat measurements or other graphical techniques that can compare a lab's relative importance in relations to other in the study in term of measure values and variation of uncertainties. So at the bottom there, that's basically the formula there. We reference ISO 13528 for further guidance for analyzing proficiency testing, other methods. All right, going down the pecking order. So we mentioned intra-lab comparison. So just bear in mind, this will require approval from PJLA in advance. An intra-lab comparison is conducted when several analysis or technicians within an organization perform testing or calibration on the same or similar artifact using the same method under specified control conditions. The data resulting from this activity shall be analyzed for statistical validation. So basically, as far as what it is, it's the same as an interlab, but it's not going outside your organization. So if you have, say, technician A, B, C, D, and perhaps technician A is a senior technician, where they would test the same sample or calibrate the same artifact, and then the other three technicians would also do the same. And then you, of course, would have to compare their results in a meaningful way have predefined limits of acceptance. You could still use the eNormal calculator for doing this. Very last in the pecking order is repeatability studies. So if none of the other testing activities are feasible, and in this may be the case in a highly specialized organization employing a single technician, proficiency may be demonstrated through repeatability studies prior with PJLA approvals. So what are we referring to there? Repeatability studies consist of a number of tests or measurements, generally at least 8, performed on the same or similar artifact using the same or specified controlled conditions. The results of these studies shall be analyzed for statistical validity by appropriate means. So basically, big problem I see with repeatability. Basically shows that you can repeat your results, but you really need to assure that it is the correct result and repeated. So again, for intra lab comparison and repeatability studies, and there's a requirement again up there, and these aren't things that we just hand out and it's on request. I'll give you a couple examples. Like say you're calibrating pipettes. There's no way we will approve that as an intra-lab or a repeatability studies, because basically if we are aware of a third-party provider out there that you can use, we would require you to either A, use that third-party provider, or B, conduct an inter-lab test. And it's something that I sincerely hope that we are consistent with at PJLA. It wouldn't be fair, for example, if you're calibrating pipettes and we require one organization to either use that third party or interlab and have another organization get approved for intralab. So that's the main reason with being consistent on that. And if there is a third party provider, if we're aware of that, we would require you to use it. If you have to put in the request, that's one of the first things you want to look at. Hey, are there any third-party providers? So at least make an effort, go out there, see if there are any third-party providers out there. And for whatever reason, if you're unable to coordinate an interlab test, then go ahead and plead your case there. Then also, how are you going to analyze the data and compare the results in a meaningful way, such as perhaps at the eNormal analysis. All right, coming down the home stretch here, just want to mention this briefly. We do have other programs at PJLA that have additional requirements, just as a DOD, ELAP, and EPAL, NLAP programs that we have. I'm not involved in those, but I know they have some industry-specific requirements that need to be looked at that we incorporate into PL1. So if you're organization is involved in any of those, this is the requirements there. I'll just leave that up there for a moment. Y'all can look at it. All righty, that's going to bring the end of today's presentation. Appreciate everyone signing in here. Okay, a few questions here. Bear with me. Let me make sure my screen gets populated here. And I always say, if you heard me, this is live TV. So I'm reading this as exactly as they were typed. I hope I'm hitting the nail on the head as far as getting the gist of the question here. First question. Suitable PT schemes are often difficult because they are generally absent. We prefer conducting interlab trials. Is this in line with PT policies? Well, interlab comparisons, that's where you're comparing those results to results outside your organization. That's an acceptable proficiency testing protocol in regards to PL1. Just as long as you analyze the data, have your predefined limits set, and hopefully everything is in agreement there. Based on your experience, what are some of the best ways to monitor proficiency testing across multiple labs? Just making sure all labs have completed within a 4-year time frame. That's something that the assessor would need to look at, and that's basically putting together the 4-year plan. So basically, basically, a first number, if I'm getting the gist of this question, just making sure that you have everything in place. And our assessors go through the training. We have annual training with them every year. 4-year plan, they want to assure that all the disciplines are covered in a 4-year period. So even if you're just a one lab, pick on pipettes again. You're a calibration lab, and that's the only thing on your scope of accreditation. That's a pretty easy 4-year plan. You're going to have to do that proficiency test every single year, every throughout the 4 years. It's a little bit more challenging. Some of our scopes I would say 30 pages long. I've seen them, and they're a little bit more challenging to assure that everything's going to be captured over the 4-year period. And then, hopefully if you're a large lab like that and you're just doing the bare bones minimum, you have other things in place there under 7-8. Excuse me, 7-7. I'm sorry, assuring the validity of results. Because if you think about it, it could be you get your something done there, and if you keep going down the list, it might be bare bones minimum quite some time before you can get to that item again. But there is no, as far as a tool, it's just to let our assessors know and assuring that, like I said, before you're accredited, you have to have that PT plan. Every year we come on site, we're going to be looking for proficiency testing to be completed within the 4-year plan. Is there a tool for statistical evaluation and analysis of intra-lab comparison? Yep, so if you've been approved for intra-lab, like I mentioned before, you can use that e-normal analysis. So I mentioned, I gave the example of a technician, senior technician, perhaps technician A, have them be the reference lab and all the other labs' values be compared to them. That tool can also be used for intra-lab comparison. It's not an all-encompassing tool. You can come up perhaps with your own. It's just some way to show that they are comparable. For repeatability studies, if we have two data sets, we can determine statistical precision and accuracy. Would this be sufficient? Again, that would need to be, well, first of all, depending on what the test is or calibration, and it would have to go through that approval first. You would need to state your case as to why you're doing repeatability study. And that would even fall below intra-lab tests. So perhaps you only have one, it's a specialized area, you have one technician, and it was approved. And I would say you have two data sets. Can we determine if pending has been approved? I don't see my answer would be I don't see why not. Precision and accuracy, would this be sufficient? If we have two data sets, we can determine statistical precision and accuracy. Would this be sufficient? I would say yes. If you've been approved to do the repeatability studies, then I don't see why not. Very good. Very good questions. Before we go, just want to give you a heads up for next month. Have a good one for you. Section 6.5. I get a lot of questions. Even I come across them sometimes, even when I'm doing a presentation like today. A lot of interest in uncertainties. So we're going to look at that next month. So mark your calendar. June the 30th, we're going to look at Section 6.5. These are the requirements in 17025 for measurement uncertainties. And we're also going to look at some fundamentals. Uncertainties, I always say that's a broad area. You know, folks are always interested in your area of testing, your area of calibrations. It's going to be different. Testing, what bucket do you fall in? Calibration, you were doing a truck scale as opposed to a coordinate measurement machine. There's things that always need to be considered. And then beyond there, just depends on what's being calibrated or tested. Look forward to having you all online with me June the 30th, and we will dissect this. We'll look at the requirements and hopefully answer some of your questions. So thank you all, and enjoy the rest of your day, and look forward to having you all log in next month.